From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour, you see it every day in Ukraine, where Russia's war on the country is stressing the medical system to the breaking point there. Russian forces have targeted hospitals, clinics, schools, and the medical community around the world has tried to step up to help. Relief efforts are being organized here in Monroe County, with doctors raising money for medical relief. That's just one example of the work being done to help Ukrainians. The nonprofit Rock Maidan is continuing its work, raising funds and sending supplies to Ukraine. And artists are donating their work for an upcoming show, which will raise money for humanitarian relief efforts. This hour, we're going to talk with some of the people behind this work. And listeners have asked us for almost 3 months now, how can we help? What is the kind of help that is needed and that can get to the hands of the people who need it the most in Ukraine? Some more answers this hour. Let me welcome our guests. With us in studio, Dr. Yulia Snyder is a pediatric neurologist at Rochester Regional Health. Dr. Snyder, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Alex Wagenblas is a committee member and media contact for the Artists for Ukraine Art Show and Sale. Alex, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
On the line with us is Dr. Alex Pasierkowski, associate professor of neurology and pediatrics at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Dr. Pasierkowski, thank you for being with us.
Evan, thanks for having me. Thank you.
Elena Delay is back with us, a member of Rock Maidan. Elena, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Evan.
And Irene Burke, board member for Rock Maidan and committee member for the Artists for Ukraine Art Show and Sale. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Evan.
There's a lot of different directions we will go, but let me just start with this. I was talking to Dr. Snyder briefly, and I don't know 3 months ago if most Americans would know the name of your hometown. And now I think most would. Tell us where you're from.
I'm from Kharkiv, which unfortunately has been on the news quite a bit recently. And yes, you're absolutely right. Back in the day, I would just say Eastern Ukraine. And now everyone knows how to spell it.
What is it? I can't even imagine what it's like for you watching what's happened there.
It's definitely very sad. Lots of people who I know and love are still there. Some fled to Western Ukraine, some across the border. Some actually elected to stay and are still in Kharkiv. Luckily, it's getting quieter there, not as much shelling going on with Ukrainian troops pushing Russian occupiers all the way back to the border with Russia. But it's still some, especially for the region rather than city itself.
How much friends and family do you have there?
Oh gosh, it's really first 25 years of my life.
And are you in contact with them regularly?
Yes, I have all sorts of ways to contact them on my phone nowadays. It's just part of my daily routine nowadays. I wake up first before even getting out of bed. I check my messages. There's WhatsApp. There's Telegram. There's Facebook. There's literally texting, checking the news, several different sources just to see where things are at and how is everyone doing the day.
Do you have a sense now, Dr. Snyder, any optimistic sense of how this could end and what the coming weeks and months might look like?
I think nowadays there's definitely way more optimism with the Ukrainian forces doing as well as they are doing. I think a couple of months ago, we definitely had different thoughts on the outcome, but they seem to be doing just amazing, outstanding job, obviously with the help of all of the friends across the globe. Unfortunately, I don't see the end in sight yet. It's probably going to be still months, hopefully not years.
Oh, boy. And the work that you do as a pediatric neurologist, it has been really, really difficult for people around the world to see the images of children. Some children literally in basements trying to stay away from shelling. Does your work impact any of your sort of emotional reaction to this? I mean, we all care about kids in this spot, but do you feel even more connected because of your work?
Definitely. This is what we do all day long, taking care of the kids, taking care of the family, and knowing how much more goes into it makes it even harder, knowing that, you know, the kids can't go without those anti-seizure drugs that we prescribe. That even skipping a couple of doses can lead to medical emergencies and It was very easy to go without medications there with all of the regular infrastructure crumbling down, all the pharmacies being shut down, no ways to bring medications in, Russians targeting the trucks and deliveries on the highway. It's just devastating.
Do you have friends or family in Russia itself?
At this point, I actually do not. I had a cousin, but he actually moved to Crimea a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Okay. I wonder if there's any sense of reality and an attempt to share the reality across that border. Do you see that?
One of my best friend's mother is still in Russia, but the way my friend worded is that she, quote unquote, was never a fan of Putin. So they're just appalled and disgusted by what's going on, really. But it's just a single person.
We're going to talk in a moment about these various efforts, including what doctors are doing. We'll talk about Rock Maidan. We'll talk about what the artists are doing. Let me ask Elena Delay, you know, in the past when we've talked on this program, it was never at the scale of what is happening now. And I'm wondering what these last few months have been like for you and maybe where your mindset is now and what comes next, Elena.
Well, it's true. Back when we met in 2014, 2015, we thought at the time that it was a tremendous tragedy because a large part of Ukraine suffered. But now it's the whole country. The East is completely demolished by Russian bombing. There are 13 million people who are displaced. 13 million. If you just think about New York State, we have about 19.5 million of population of the whole state. And in Ukraine, 13 million people are without house. Many are killed. Many are wounded. Hospitals are demolished. It's emotionally, I cannot comprehend it, to be honest with you. Personally, this is very, very difficult. So the scope of the work that is needed from the world community is tremendous. And because Ukraine really cannot win this alone. Fortunately, we are having a lot of help from many sources, and we're truly, truly grateful locally, globally, to everybody who is stepping up to the plate and helping us.
Do you have friends or family across the Russian border, Elena?
Not across the Russian border. I have friends in Kyiv, but most of my family is in Western Ukraine, which has been shelled, but not to the extent that Eastern Ukraine is. Yes.
Yeah, and I ask because I think Americans generally are having a hard time understanding the propaganda. I understand certainly propaganda is strong, and it doesn't only exist in Russia. We get that, but some of it is so cartoonish and ridiculous that the world might be looking at this going, well, surely the people must know, or the opinion must not be with the Kremlin. But I don't know. How do you view that, Elena?
See, what people don't understand here is the amount of propaganda and the amount of information that is being poured onto Russian citizens. They also do not have access to other information for the most part. I mean, there are some that do. But if you think about it, if you are bombarded with false information day in and day out, you will believe it. And not for nothing, we grew up in Soviet Union, and Soviet Union was full of propaganda. And perhaps because of that, I can understand it. But those who have not had that experience, they don't understand that. They feel that, well, but people surely must know. They go online and they read something. Well, Russian people don't have that, okay? And not for nothing, many of them are so brainwashed by now that I think they choose to believe the propaganda. And this is my personal opinion. Perhaps I'm wrong on that. But it is really the extent of that propaganda and the extent to exposure of Russian nationals to that is truly beyond understanding for a person who lives in a free world.
Let me ask our other guests if they want to weigh in, just sort of briefly taking a look at the state of the war and their own perspectives, and our guests coming from different backgrounds. Irene Burke, what's currently on your mind as you watch this conflict unfold?
I look with trepidation at the news, particularly, especially what happened with the release of the the wounded soldiers in Azovstal. The Ukrainian army hopes, and the Ukrainian government hopes, that they'll be exchanged for Russian prisoners. But the Russians are indicating that that is not likely to happen. You know, we're encouraged by the take back of some of the villages in the north and the east. But I still, every day is, you know, I look at the news with trepidation. Is what, you know, what's going to happen next.
Is anything giving you hope right now?
The hope is that the I'm getting hope from the fact that the world is in full support of Ukraine, and arms are coming in from all over Europe, from Japan, Australia, and the world is continuing to support Ukraine. And with this additional military support and weaponry, Ukraine has a good chance of winning the war. And that is our goal, to win this war.
Well, but I do wonder over time if a couple of things could happen. First of all, some of the Western support could start to splinter a bit. And we're seeing some differences of opinion. Macron and Boris Johnson have very different views, I think, right now. Olaf Scholz has offered a kind of a more nuanced take than perhaps Germany gave 2 months ago. And in the United States, 57 Republicans voted against the recent aid to Ukraine. One of the recently high-profile elected Republican candidates for Senate in Ohio, J.D. Vance, rather famously recently said, why would he care about Ukrainians? He doesn't care about Ukraine. It should not be our focus. So certainly there is, I think, a groundswell within the current Republican Party to push back against some of the aid and some of the involvement, and that could grow. We're going to see midterms if this goes on for months, or as Yulia says, if this goes on for longer, that the a Republican wave in the midterms could swing some of that. Do you feel that the support that you just described is likely to stay?
Well, I don't think we've ever seen so much bipartisan support for military or military relief as we've seen just recently. And I consider these Republican candidates as outliers, and they're like, you know, voices that should be ignored but not fully. And I give a lot more weight to the people who are supporting Ukraine. I don't know if that's being overly optimistic, but that's the only thing I can rely on.
Okay, and let me just ask our other guests before I turn to Alex and Alex about this. Elena, do you feel there's any splintering going on in American politics on this?
Well, look, American politics, like politics in any country, is very complex.
Sure.
And in recent years, unfortunately, that, you know, battle between Republican Party and Democratic Party has grown to be a bit, maybe too much even. But as Irene said, they have united with this Help Ukraine. And probably the reason is that this war is not just about Ukraine. This is really a war on democracy. And a lot of shifting of geopolitical powers are happening now. So truly, I don't think it's just about Ukraine. It is about how the world will look 10 years from now, 20 years from now. So really, this support is necessary, and perhaps we should look deeper into why there is opposition, and those who are considering opposing perhaps should look into the reasoning and weigh in with positives of support.
Okay. Dr. Snyder, do you see, Yulia, any fissures, any concerns there?
I think that just completely opposing might be a little bit short-sighted either. There are just so many long-term consequences of this war that we're already unfortunately seeing with gas prices going up and the food shortages that everyone predicts is going to keep getting worse. So I think that even if you wanted to say, well, I just don't care about Ukraine, we're not going to, you know, support them financially, that is really something that will come back to haunt you.
Alex Wagenblas, how do you see what's happening right now? Give me your mindset right here.
Yeah, this is a crazy time in the history of the world where one country just, it's happened before and it's happening again. I think several years ago, I thought we were sort of done with European democracies claiming other countries, but here we go again. So Putin has done a very effective control over the media and what's being said in the country, with my understanding is that there's up to a 15-year prison term in Russia if you are calling it a war rather than a special operation.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of very, very sneaky behind the scenes control that's happening that make it hard for it to be call a spade in Russia. I think I would love to see more awareness of Russians for what is really happening, but they're turning everything, lots of things on their head and making up false claims, and it can be very confusing using deep fakes. I've seen mm-hmm. that.
Mm-hmm.
So it is, and I think that is has been a very effective policy. You sort of, it makes it somewhat hard to know what's real. And if you don't know what's real, it's hard to act on that sometimes.
Yeah, I think it's hard to gauge even from the outside. The question comes up a lot, Alex, what do the Russian people think? Well, how do we really know? How do we speak monolithically about something like that?
Yeah, that is an incredibly impossible task to do. It's hard to say, even what we're thinking, you know,
yeah.
from day to day. So, it's hard to know because it is, I mean, it's the one reporter who tried to get on the television to make her claim and was yanked off in Russia.
Very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Dr. Pasiorkowski, how are you seeing this?
Well, I want to bring this back around to why the work that we're doing, I think, resonates so strongly with our supporters and donors, that a lot of us may feel we just don't have control over what some members of Congress are feeling. We don't have control over what different European presidents are feeling. We certainly don't have any control over Putin or what's going on within Russia. But I think what we've seen among our supporters is a real need and desire to help in a tangible way and do the things that we can do with our own hands. So I do think that you know, feeling of helplessness, if we give up to it, if we give up to that feeling, then yeah, we can be in a very bad place about hope. But a lot of our work is really about holding on to hope and being finding practical solutions in the ways that we know how. And I think all of the people on the panel illustrate that.
Well, let's talk about that, Doctor. And I'll start with the project that you're part of, Doctors on Medical Relief. Can you give us a sense for what's going on there and what you want the public to know?
Well, this is all thanks to the leadership of Dr. Snyder, who has, as you've discussed, direct contacts with many healthcare workers in Ukraine, and was hearing firsthand about medicine shortages, damaged infrastructure, and there was a real groundswell among the pediatric healthcare community in general here in Rochester. We all really stick together, and as you mentioned, yeah, it's all about really taking care of kids, whether they're here or whether they're in Ukraine. In parallel with Rock Maidan and the humanitarian relief that they've been doing for many years, we bring to the table the ability to actually buy prescription medications for subspecialty care and figuring out the logistics to ship those medications directly to hospitals that need them in Ukraine.
Dr. Snyder, you want to elaborate here?
Sure. We are on our shipment number 10 at this point.
Okay.
About 50-50 over-the-counter versus prescription medications. For prescription medications, we've shipped anti-seizure medications, antibiotics, cardiac meds. We've utilized several different ways of getting medications in there. We're working with nonprofit organization called Blessings, where we're getting the prescription medications from. We are collaborating with several other nonprofits within the country, and we'll be collaborating with not-for-profits in Poland and Ukraine. We've utilized USPS, we've utilized Nova Pochta, which is basically FedEx of Ukraine, if you will, that was delivering shipments for us. Our most recent two shipments were through Brother Foundation. The hospitals that we've targeted so far, three of them were in Kharkiv, two pediatric, one was the trauma hospital, and one in Chernihiv, and one in Lviv.
Yeah, you know, looking at the list of contacts you have that are still working with kids every day, even in a city like Kharkiv, which has dealt with so much ongoing assault, that work has to get done. What are the biggest needs that you're hearing described? What do kids especially need the most?
Honestly, it's really everything. It really is. Right now, maybe the situation with just over-the-counter ibuprofen, Tylenol is a little bit better, but even a month ago, it was very challenging to just find things that we take for granted in this country. If your child has a fever, you probably already have ibuprofen in your cupboard, and then if you don't, then there was no place to get it. And antibiotics also, it's just unimaginable how easy it is to treat some of these conditions here, like urinary tract infections. Or my closest friend, who is a pediatrician, she actually fled to the western Ukraine, but she continued seeing patients via telemedicine. So she was telling me some frontline stories of the kids who are still in the bomb shelters underground in the subway system. And things that they had to go through is just as unimaginable as her trying to find somebody to get into her empty office, to find the military first aid kit, to find the military doxycycline antibiotics, so some grandfather, one of her patients, can be treated because he was literally dying from the urinary tract infection. They could not find the antibiotics for him.
Some of this work is just absolutely heroic, because when we think about war, we think about who has been injured in shelling, in bombing, in attacks. But when facilities are not available, all of a sudden a child with cancer can't get treatment. All of a sudden a child with a different disease can't get treatment. Or the medicine isn't there that somebody relies on. This is absolutely heroic work. What is a way for someone in the public, someone listening now, if they want to contribute and help Dr. Snyder, what can they do?
They can go to our website, which is rockukrainemedrelief.com. .net.
Can you do that one more time?
ROC, R-O-C, Ukraine, Med, M-E-D, Relief, R-E-L-I-E-F, .net. And then there's a donate now button up top.
So what you really need is the donation so you can determine what supplies, what meds, etc.
We are actually getting quite a bit of requests at this point. We know what's needed, and at this point we also know how to get it there. We have several different ways to get it there. We continue to improve our logistics to make it faster and cheaper. At this point, fundraising is what we're going to be focusing on.
I'm assuming you don't need extra medications that people have in their medicine closets, cabinets at home.
Not the used ones, not the expired ones.
But yeah, please. It's rockukrainemedrelief.net. Dr. Pasierkowski, in some small way, does this help empower people? I mean, in some ways, it feels helpless. It feels detached and far away. Go ahead. Yeah. What does this effort do in your mind?
Well, because we directly know the physicians and other healthcare workers in Ukraine, we're beginning to hear back from them. When our supplies have arrived, and there's nothing more gratifying. It's incredibly empowering to know that although each of us individually with our hands, we really can't affect global geopolitics, right? But if at the minimum, this one thing we can do, we can keep this one pediatric clinic in antibiotics or provide for anti-seizure medicines for this one group of families. And then, we're not the only ones helping. There are people all around the world and all around the United States who are doing this work. So eventually it'll grow and grow. And we're at the point now where we're really conceiving a sort of rapid response effort where we are hearing through our network of physicians that we're collaborating with. There's a national task force of like-minded doctors that we're part of. And we all have our different connections in Ukraine. We hear who needs what and where are they. And we're working with NGOs, as Dr. Snyder mentioned, in Poland and in Ukraine to actually hopefully do much of our purchasing in Poland or in Western Ukraine where things can be acquired and getting them as quickly as possible. So that's actually the next step that we're looking forward to as we grow this project.
Okay. So much work needs to be done to help people who are in cities like Kharkiv, which is where Dr. Snyder is from, the many other cities that have been under assault, and frankly, the growing refugee crisis and the displacement crisis. There's literally millions of kids now who are not sleeping in the beds they slept in 3 months ago. And the question is, where do they get the help and support from? This is one of those ways. And that's why we're talking about these various relief efforts. And after we take our only break of the hour, we're going to talk more about what Artists for Ukraine are doing. We'll talk about Rock Maidan. We'll answer more of your questions about medical efforts to help Ukrainian children and people. And we'll take this only break and come right back and keep at it here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, our guest is Dr. Valerie Perry, who is a researcher and a senior associate for the Democratization Policy Council in Sarajevo. She lives in Sarajevo but is from Buffalo. She talks next hour about her reaction to what happened in her hometown this past weekend and the connections she sees between political extremism abroad and in the United States. That's next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. If you're just joining us, this is a conversation about various efforts to support the Ukrainian people, to offer relief for not just medical supplies, but the people on the ground in Ukraine helping children, helping coordinate supply efforts, pharmaceuticals, all kinds of medicines that are needed. So you just heard about one of those efforts. Artists for Ukraine have an event coming up, and Alex Wagenblas is a committee member and a media contact for Artists for Ukraine. There's an art show in sale. Tell us, Alex, what is happening and what you want people to know about it.
Well, we're getting ready to have a gallery opening at ROCO, the Rochester Contemporary Gallery, which is at 137 East Avenue, downtown Rochester. The opening will be the first Friday, September 2nd, and the show will go till September 17th. Right now, we're at the phase where we're gathering some attention to work on pieces, to get the pieces ready, to have them available for sale. And all of the money will be going to Rock Maidan. So it's all directly going to Rock Maidan. It's an opportunity for artists to express themselves and to help raise funds for this very important cause.
That's coming up again. When and what do you want people in terms to find the work there?
Right. So right now we are on the Rochester Contemporary website, which is rochestercontemporary.org. There's a link on there, and that has information for signing up for the intent to donate. We're trying to right now gauge how many works we're expecting and if we may need to use additional space. So if you can fill that in, that would be wonderful. We're looking to have that done by June 30th. And then all of the works are to be delivered. There's a drop-off day of August 21st.
Okay, so it's rochestercontemporary.org. Keep an eye there. And that's how you can support some of the art. And that will go, those proceeds go to Rock Maidan. It's another great effort here. And if you're wondering about what Rock Maidan is, Elena Delay, can you describe for listeners what is Rock Maidan?
Oh, absolutely. So I'm going to start with explaining the name because we have this question all the time. And the word Maidan is a large public place in Ukrainian, Maidan. Because we were formed in 2014, we used Rock for Rochester and Maidan as this large square, and in Kyiv, the Independence Square was the square where people were peacefully protesting at the time. So this is just an explanation because everybody always asks, and, you know, Rock Maidan, people think we are strong as a rock or that we rock, and we are kind of all three. And our work has been really, really concentrating on helping those who need, who are victims of war in Ukraine. And we are concentrating on medical supplies and humanitarian aid. When Dr. Snyder's group is working on prescription medication, we are collecting other kinds of medical supplies. And these are tactical medical aid kits, individual first aid kits, which are used at the front lines. We have so far sent about 1,400 of those to Ukraine. And just to give listeners an idea, each one costs about $120. And then we also are collecting medical supplies from a specific list, which can be found on our website. And we take over-the-counter medication, cold flu medication, preferably not in liquid form. We take painkillers. We also collect tourniquets and Israeli emergency bandages and quick clot and so on. So something people can buy. We have organized an Amazon registry for Rock Maidan because on Amazon, you can purchase medical supplies that cannot be purchased at like Target or CVS and whatnot. So people are welcome to utilize that gift registry to purchase medical supplies that can be sent to Ukraine. And by the way, we have solicited used suitcases from people, and we now have like a whole arsenal of these suitcases, which we pack with medical supplies people donate. And we find someone who flies to Ukraine to deliver it as fast as we can. Any medical supplies that are purchased by us, like these individual first aid kits or even not medical supplies, but sleeping bags, sleeping cots, but something that is acutely needed right now in Ukraine, we ship by air as soon as we collect them. So we really have our logistics are quite well established now. And we also welcome those who have medical offices, if they have surplus of medical supplies, like someone just donated to us 60,000 of medical isolation gowns. It came from Global Products Resources in New Jersey. So any company that wishes to donate their surplus to us, we will take it. We'll ship it to Ukraine. Dental offices, we take surplus of dental supplies because there's acute need in that. So we're primarily trying to concentrate our work on medical supplies. We do collect humanitarian aid. Only certain things are collected. We have to be very mindful of what we collect and how we ship it. We cannot take used clothes, unfortunately. We cannot take certain food items. So because of logistics of shipping and the cost of shipping as well. So if people would like to donate to us, we have a nice list on our website, rockmaidan.org. And there are two different lists that are posted. We now have a warehouse in the old Xerox campus in Webster. We have a crew of people who work at that warehouse, and they're led by four members of Rock Maidan. So truly, our logistics are quite good by now, and we welcome any help we can get from the community. And I just have to take this opportunity also to thank the community, because everyone has been so responsive, and we are truly, truly grateful. We have done tremendous work in the past 3 months, and it is all thanks to the Rochester community.
Irene, you've done a lot of work helping organize fundraisers. There's been a lot of people stepping up, hasn't there?
Yes, we operate sort of like the Ukrainian army. We're not centralized. Everyone is free to come up with an event, make some contacts with people they know. For example, I have a brother-in-law who works at Lamar Advertising, and I just asked him, you know, can we have a free billboard? And they came up, gave us three billboards for the whole month of April. You know, so we're really grateful for that. And, you know, the billboards ask for donations to rockmaidan.org to help Ukraine. We had an event at the Iron Smoke Distillery mm-hmm. at the beginning of April, which was a lot of fun and also a way to release some tension. And we had a big crowd. Everyone was truly hoping to do the best for Ukraine and make any kind of contribution they could. Just this last weekend, we had a sunflower painting party at the Ukrainian Cultural Center, where we painted sunflowers and you know, posted the picture of 70 women holding up the sunflowers that they painted, which were all unique. So that was another fun event. Coming up, we're back at the Lilac Festival this weekend. Our booth is on the corner of Highland and South Avenue. We are there Thursday through Sunday. We'll have flyers with QR codes allowing people to make donations through the QR codes through Venmo or PayPal. And also get the flyers that list all the aid that we're collecting for medical supplies and also the clothing. We have also a rugby event this weekend at the Gates Memorial Park with three Rochester teams playing some out-of-town teams, and that's from 11 to 4. On the 28th at Silk O'Loughlin's on St. Paul Boulevard, live music from Travis Fitch. There'll be food, drink specials, and a raffle. That's from 2 to 6 p.m. On June 2nd, Rock for Ukraine at Photo City on Atlantic Avenue at 7 p.m. Admission is $15. There'll be five bands, the Living Room, Mesh, The Clockman, Honest John and The Problem, and Bellwether Breaks. Following that, on June 11th, a golf tournament at Braemar Country Club in Spencerport. And then jumping forward into the summer, the Ukrainian Festival returns to St. Josephat's in the middle of August, August 18th through the 21st. So they had a long COVID break. So this is also they'll be celebrating their 50th anniversary of the festival. And last but not least, the Artists for Ukraine exhibit at the Rochester Contemporary Art Gallery, September 2nd through September 17th.
So a lot happening, and we're not just talking about today, tomorrow, this week, next week. And what's interesting to me, and maybe all of our guests can kind of weigh in on this aspect of the next phase of this war. You go back to the first week of the war, the second week of the war. The Kremlin clearly thought that they could get to Kyiv and maybe overthrow the Zelensky government and end the war quickly. And there was some reporting that Russian soldiers were given sort of parade uniforms to march and be celebrated, greeted as liberators, to use a phrase that is now infamous. All of those things were not true. And if you go back almost 3 months now, it was almost like this concern that, well, if this sort of goes south real quickly for the Kremlin, would they escalate? You know, how dangerous is the situation? What would they do? How quickly will they try to end it? Will they use bigger and bigger weapons? The reality that we're starting to see, especially in the Donbas, is that the Kremlin is prepared for a long grind to try to take territory, to try to find some sort of victory, even if it is not the original objective. And part of what seems to be at the core of the Kremlin's thinking is the world will be engaged in those early weeks, and then people move on. Events happen, other focuses come up, people stop wanting to pass funding support. So there seems to be this idea that we'll stay, the world will move on. And these fundraisers and these events just keep happening. And it's almost like the Ukrainian people around the world who are, you know, with us in all these vibrant communities are going to help us make sure we keep our eyes there, that the world doesn't just move on. What do you think, Irene?
Well, you know, a lot of these activities are not initiated by us. And, you know,
that's great.
For example, the first major event was the Rochester Philharmonic concert in early March, where they all of a sudden had an opening in their calendar. And within a week, they put together a beautiful concert that also included the participation of the Ukrainian community. And that event raised $58,000, which is has been one of our biggest fundraisers so far, where we did not even initiate it.
Dr. Snyder, any concern that part of the Kremlin's thinking is we're going to stay there and as long as it takes, that this will not necessarily be a short war and that the support will wane?
I think it's a very legitimate concern, and I think that that might be partly what they're really counting on, because let's go back to the Crimean extension. You know, initially it was a big deal, and then very quickly it was just, well, I guess that's how it's going to be. And then the eastern part, two regions got invaded. And now I think that it just needs to be dealt with, or it will keep coming back, unfortunately. And there's going to be more and more of what they would want.
Elena, how do you feel about some of the outside pressure on the Zelensky government and the Ukrainian people to accept some sort of a ceasefire solution to cede some territory? How do you feel about those proposals and about the concern that the Kremlin is prepared to really wait this out for a long time?
Well, Kremlin kind of doesn't have much choice now because they have lost on so many levels. I don't see how Ukrainian government can possibly compromise anything after that many lives have been lost, after country has been ruined completely, the whole part, eastern part, is completely demolished by Russian bombing. There is no way to compromise at this point. They have to win. I also think that with the land lease the U.S. signed, with all the help that is coming from other countries, I believe Ukraine can win. And I don't believe that they are looking to have this as a long-term war. So I sincerely hope that with the help, military help that is being provided to them, they will be able to push back. And they are doing a tremendous job. Like, the recent developments on the Eastern Front have been really, really promising. So the pressure that Zelensky gets, I hope they will stand. And I hope that they will not sign any agreement that is not advantageous for Ukraine. That really should not take place at this point after, as I said, so many lives have been lost. It's hard to predict what will happen because you really can't believe Russia. Just look at what is happening now with people who were defending Azov and in Mariupol. They were let, they were transported to Donbas with a stipulation that they will be exchanged then for Russian prisoners. And now Russia doesn't want to do it. And I'm fearful for these people because they have been standing strong for so many months. And actually, thank to them, Ukraine is where it is today. So hopefully the world will find a way to both diplomatically and military push Russia back and win this war for Ukraine.
But 2 points there when you talk about, you know, Ukraine must win. I read two very different viewpoints on this. Granted, these are American viewpoints, quite far removed here. In the New York Times, Ross Douthat wrote that the closer we get to true Ukrainian victory, meaning expelling all of the Russian forces, no ceding of the territories, or even a talk about taking back Crimea, the closer we get to nuclear escalation. Whereas Timothy Snyder, who is a Yale history professor and the author of a number of historical books, including The Road to Unfreedom and On Tyranny, he wrote a long piece saying that a propagandist can declare victory with any terms, that Ukraine could expel all of Russia. Putin could still go back to his people and say, well, we got the Nazis out and we destroyed most of their weapons. We won. Let's move on. And that's how propaganda works. You need not give him a victory. He will claim a victory no matter what happens. So Snyder and Douthat have very different views on that. And I'm curious to know where you are on that, Elena.
Considering how Putin's words have been evolving and changing, what he has been proclaiming at his goals of this special operation. And if you think about what his goals were stated to be 3 months ago and today, these are very different things because he was going to take the whole Ukraine, then he was going to take the eastern Ukraine and so on. So he already is proving what Snyder is writing about. And that to me kind of indicates that perhaps there is a way to push them back and to have a victory, which they will find some kind of compromise for themselves to claim that they still won and they achieved their goals, whatever they might be. But they are goals, as you have noticed, over the course of the past, almost 3 months, have been changing. So I understand that the world is fearful of this escalation of the what is happening in Ukraine, and God forbid, you know, we really don't know what might happen. Of course, there's always a threat of chemical weapons or nuclear, but we hope that not. Okay. Russia also has, besides Putin, other people in its government. And there are different views on what is happening there now, and views on what would be the consequences should Putin decide to use nuclear weapons. I am tending to believe that they will not go for it. But of course, who knows?
Dr. Snyder, does that concern you?
I agree. I think that at this point, for Russia's got to be, and Putin's got to be smart enough to realize that this pretty much will be a suicide to use a nuclear weapon on Ukraine. I think that initially Putin was counting on everyone being, you know, maybe they will make some noise for a little bit, and then it's gonna all go quiet like it did, like it was last two times.
In 2014.
But at this point, him with all this support, enormous support that Ukraine received, I think it probably gave him an idea that it's going to be quite a bit of price to pay if he decided to use nuclear weapons. And I think that I would be fearful if I was him.
Okay, so I've got some emails from listeners, by the way, saying, hey, before the hour's up, remind people exactly how they can find these various efforts. Spell Rock Maidan. I got a couple of those. Rock Maidan is Maidan is M-A-I-D-A-N. Rock Maidan, R-O-C-M-A-I-D-A-N. So let me go around the panel and ask all of our guests, share whatever you want with our listeners as they think about supporting your various efforts and where exactly to find it. Dr. Snyder, I'll start with you.
The link to our website is ROC Ukraine medrelief.net. And again, we are providing prescription medication support and medical devices support to hospitals in Ukraine.
Okay. And Dr. Pasierkowski, anything you want to add to that?
No, I just want to emphasize how grateful we are to all of our supporters and donors. And one of the things that I think is just on our side is the motivation behind all of the people who've contributed is just born out of that outrage, that moral outrage about what's going on over in Ukraine. And that's something I don't think the Russian government counted on. When we look at our list of donors and supporters, it's doctors, nurses, healthcare workers, and people who are outside the healthcare field who previously had really no specific connection to the Ukrainian community. Of course, we have a lot of support within the community too, but we have just really extended that to everyone who cares about healthcare and for children, really. And people are just, I think, very passionate about making a difference. So please join us if you have that passion. Thank you.
Alex Wagenblas, committee member for Artists for Ukraine's art show and sale. Information there coming up.
Yeah, the show, whatever your nationality is, you're invited to participate. Whatever your 2 or 3D medium is, you're invited to join. I have a friend that does textile art and one that does hand-sewn gloves. These are all kinds of different ways you can participate. Sometimes you don't know how to make a flak jacket, and there's other ways to help. And one of those can be making art that someone else could donate to help the cause. So if you're interested in making art, if you're interested in looking at art, if you want to go to a party, that's pretty great. The first Friday at Rocco in September 2nd, please consider the show. Again, the dates are September 2nd is the opening, and it'll be up till September 17th. The work is due August 21st at Rochester Contemporary, which is on 137 East Ave. And if you can, please sign up for the intent to donate by the end of June on the rochestercontemporary.org website.
And the support is going to go to Rock Maidan. Elena Delay, where can people learn more about Rock Maidan, which is, again, M-A-I-D-A-N, Elena?
Yes, so ROCMAIDAN.org. please visit our website. We have lists of our current donations. You also can get a link to our Amazon medical supply list and where you can purchase medical supplies for Ukraine. You're welcome to visit our warehouse at Xerox campus. Address is on our website. We take various kinds of donations, and we appreciate them all. We also work under the Ukrainian Cultural Center of Rochester, so you're welcome to visit them on Friday for Fish Fry and find out more about our efforts. And we are truly, truly grateful to the community for their wide support.
And about 30 seconds, Irene Burke, anything you want to add?
Yes, come and visit us at the Lilac Festival. Meet us, and we'll tell you about all the events coming up. You can pick up flyers listing all the medical aid and humanitarian aid we are collecting this month. So we'll be on the corner of Highland and South Avenue. The booth is yellow and blue, the colors of the Ukrainian flag. So look forward to meeting you.
That beautiful flag. And it is possible that for many generations to come, the sacrifices of the Ukrainian people, the murders and the attempted genocide and the standing up of the Ukrainian people will cement the legacy and the future of that country for generations to come. But they have to get through this conflict now, and so much support is needed. And now listeners have an opportunity to help in various ways. And I want to thank all of our guests. Elena Delay, Irene Burke from Rock Maidan, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Alex Wagenblas with Artists for Ukraine. Thank you. Thanks
Glad
for being
be here.
Yeah, great to have you. Dr. Alex Pasierkowski, a professor of neurology and pediatrics at URMC. Thank you, doctor.
Thank you, Evan.
And Dr. Yulia Snyder, a pediatric neurologist at Rochester Regional Health, native of Kharkiv. Thank you for being here. Thanks for what you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me.
More connections coming up.